Welcome to a special edition of Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Today we look at the experiences and contributions of Southeast Asian refugees who came to Portland after the U.S. withdrawal from the Vietnam War in 1975. We're listening to a song by Duran Cravan from his CD, who is a Cambodian refugee. The refugees who came to America were Vietnamese, Cambodian, Laotian, and the ethnic minorities from Laos, the Mien and the Hmong. Most had fought on the same side and helped the U.S. military in the war in Vietnam. The Mien and Hmong, the rural people in Laos, were particularly vulnerable for helping the CIA with covert operations. Staying in Laos at that time was not an option. By 1979, there were more than 62,000 Vietnamese in refugee camps. More than 140,000 people displaced from Cambodia and Laos joined them. Oregon and Washington State had the fifth largest population of Southeast Asian refugees in the country. The Portland School District was one of the first to figure out how to work with Southeast Asian youth coming to their schools. The 1.5 generation, those who came to the country at a young age, learned quickly, mastering language and writing skills before their first generation parents. Anne Morn was in English as a second language teacher at the time and has kept touch with many of her former students who now own their own businesses or work in social work or nonprofits or are teachers themselves in Portland. Most are community leaders. Anne interviewed many of them last summer and we produced this piece together. We call it Refugee Dreams Revisited. Every Sunday afternoon, about 500 kids come to the Van Long Vietnamese School in Southeast Portland. Parents started the school in 1990 because they didn't want their kids to forget what it means to be Vietnamese. The students range in age from kindergarten to high school.
Miền Bắc có nhiều bao nhiêu hệ thống sông nguồn.
Me that go back to Japan because that's all they know. At that time, people not that much friendly and they keep looking you like a stranger because you look different. You speak different. You didn't even speak the language at that time.
And Lee Po Cha had explained that he was a Hmong from Laos.
I believe that during those days, we do have some racism going on and we do had some difficulty. We had a lot of fight between, you know, Asian kids and our Caucasians or African-American kids there. You know, we've been calling names. We've been shot at.
Cambodian Ki Long Ong had survived the killing fields and refugee camps. Attending high school in Portland in 1980 was another brutal experience, this time with racism and poverty.
At school, there's always boxes of old clothes that people donated, and I actually had some of those to wear. Being on welfare is probably the most miserable things I've done in my life in America. It was embarrassing. I went to school. Kids were laughing at me. With limited English, I understood that language. The language of love and the language of hate. Doesn't matter how you speak it. Doesn't matter how you listen to it. You can actually understand that.
Learning English was often the biggest hurdle to making a new life in America.
English is probably one of the most illogical languages to learn, and I absolutely hated speaking English until now.
Most adults were slower to learn than their children. Pham Yun Le, a Mien from Laos, remembers her first English classes.
When I get here, I don't know any English at all. So when I go to anywhere, when people talk, I cannot pick up any words. What I heard is there's no word broken, just go, you know, that's all. So I have no idea. I mean, it's not easy, you know, it's hard. They're teaching us just like a kindergarten kid.
Cambodians Lee Cheng Tang and Sokum Touch were glad to have any job because it helped their families.
I cleaned toilets when I was in high school. I picked berries for all season, cucumbers, nuts. They were so damn heavy. A big bucket for a buck, but I did it anyway because we need money to pay rent. But we happy that we had freedom. This is our choice that we make, and we get our money. That's our money. We can spend on anything we want.
Our job, like my job, was before a strawberry picker, and none of the mainstream want to do that. A whole day, you earn $10. At that time, they felt that we come here to steal their job. You know, we come here to steal everything that they have. It's just a misunderstanding from the mainstream community that we are here to steal things from them.
Many refugees are very reluctant from the beginning to accept entry-level wage jobs.
Long San Xiao adjusted so quickly to life in America that he was able to help many of the men from Laos to start over. He offered them a philosophical view of the path to success.
I mean, back their homeland, there could be military commanders, officials, or government officials, or school teachers, or they have high-ranking position. But entry-level job is the way, if they get a chance, they should start. And many of them made it to the top in a few years.
The myth that Asians are the model minority, well-to-do and well-educated with higher incomes, is not true for many Southeast Asians. Many refugees struggle to stay above the poverty line. The 70s and 80s was a tough time to immigrate to Oregon. The timber industry was going bust and unemployment was at an all-time high in the state. The Hmong were members of the underclass then. Li Po Cha says they've now moved up to the ranks of the working class.
During those days, a lot of Hmong families are struggling. But today, I think they're all employed, you know, they have their own homes, and I would say that we may not, you know, living the American dreams yet, but, you know, we are becoming self-sufficient ourselves.
Li Po Cha is now the director of the Asian Family Center in Portland. He works directly with Asian youth. Nationally, 1 in 7 Asian American children live in poverty, a factor in the rise of Asian gang activity.
What really motivated kid to join gangs, it varies so much. Poverty is one. Being discriminated against may also be one of the reasons.
At first, most of the Mian parents do not accept that the kid will involve in the gang.
Long San Xiao is the president of the Yu Mian community of Oregon.
Because the parents did not understand English, and the kids come home, parents can't communicate with them. Parents don't know until the school informed them. And then they began to realize the kids were in trouble, and by then it's too late.
Since she arrived in Portland as a refugee, teacher Kim Nguyen has dedicated her life to working with troubled kids in juvenile detention facilities.
They think that they discriminated against, so they join the gangs to get the protection that they need and to be someone. If you belong to a gang, it means something, and you can show to the world that you are somebody else.
And Kim Nguyen says it isn't just the kids. The problems run deeper at home.
So we have parents who work couple jobs. We have parents who are divorced. We have domestic violence. We have child abuse. And then the sad part for these families is that they are not familiar with the language or how to navigate the system and how to get help. And then especially when parents whose children got into the legal system, then it's even scarier.
Southeast Asian refugees fled for their lives after the Vietnam War. America offered a new place to start over, but provided no escape from the post-war trauma. Li Ching Tang works in her family grocery store in Portland now, but the memories of being a refugee are still with her.
I see all the time on TV. I would see food been tossing, tons of food been tossing. I would imagine, God, and once upon a time, I would just do anything just to have a bite of that food. Okay, that's a flashback. And also, when I see a sad scene on TV or go to a movie where people feel so hungry, I was there. I know exactly how it felt, you know, to be hungry.
Queen Nguyen and Cantalee Tamavong long for their homeland.
Yes, you are free, you are safe now, but you still have a connection to the country that belonged to you, you know, that you lived before. So it was very homesick. I miss my parents. My sisters still left there. And every night I dream about I went back to Vietnam. You're homesick, but you're still afraid of the government. You're still afraid of being there, you know.
When we came, we didn't seem to worry about that, you know, we miss the homeland. But when we're getting older, I don't know, that kind of feeling is coming back to you that you long to want to go see your own country. Seems like you want to go back and you'll be able to go travel and see other friends and family that who you love in other state too, because when we leave home, we don't know who's where.
Some, like Long San Xiao, actively help out in their original countries.
Me and my wife, we plan to work until our retired age. One of my goals is to go back to Asia, to Laos or China or Thailand to educate those people. We have so many good things for other countries to learn. Through my years of experience here, that you can take back to your homeland, and I think those people will really appreciate. Yes, I hope our dream will come true one day.
Cambodian Sokamtach says many refugees fulfill a cultural responsibility for family here and overseas.
I took my children over there too, for them to see this is where I came from, this is the school that I went to. And if you are older brother, you're supposed to take care of the rest of the siblings. We have a parent, some of us build a house for the parent. The relationship is still very strong in terms of relationship in Cambodian community.
And they maintain tight communities in Portland. Pham Yun Lee says because the Mien are small in numbers, they support one another here like a large extended family.
We don't have that many people, but we're all really close. We're helping each other. Like someone's losing family member, we all, the whole community come by, and they all pitch in the money to give a donation to this family to help them with the funeral expense and all that. You know, they buy them food. So how to help our community to stay strong? Today, I am worried about the younger generation now. They have too many things to learn about American culture, and I'm afraid that in the future, maybe the children doesn't know where they come from and what their ancestors are and a background they're coming from. And not to forget about that. It's important for them to carry that on.
Carrying on traditions and preserving the culture. Giving back to their children and to their communities is the refugee dream for Southeast Asian refugees in Portland. Ki Long Ung.
The fact that I was able to get through the Khmer Rouge and I was able to overcome the language barrier and the cultural barriers and get to where I am today, a lot of times I look back and look in the mirror and it's like, how did I get here?
Refugee Dreams Revisited was produced with Anne Morin for the Crossing East radio series. You can find out more about the series at crossingeast.org. That's crossingeast.org. And if you want to learn more about our Southeast Asian refugee community in person, live in Portland, Media Rights is presenting the Crossing East Heritage Festival this Saturday, May 20th at 7:30 at Park Rose High School. That's at 12003 Northeast Shaver Street. Park Rose High School is 1003 Northeast Shaver Street in Portland. The suggested donation is $5 to $10 at the door. The Crossing East Heritage Festival features music, dance, and stories of Asian Americans in the Northwest. Featured performers include the incomparable Min Tran, who will be performing his personal story about being a boat refugee from Vietnam. Min will be performing with his company of dancers, who include Mike Barber and Teresa Mathern. Also performing that night is dancer Giselle Hata, who will be performing her personal piece on Japanese-American internment. And Jim Chan, who's a singer, he'll be singing Chinese opera with the famed Yat Sing Music Club, one of the last music clubs who perform Chinese opera in the country, and they're located right here in Portland. For more info about the Crossing East Heritage Festival, call Media Rights at 503-233-5919. That's 503-233-2919. And visit crossingeast.org for more info. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, and this is a special edition of Stage and Studio. We're taking a look at Southeast Asian refugees in the Northwest. We just heard music from Duran Cravan, who is an accordionist who will be performing at the Crossing East Heritage Festival, and he's coming all the way from Tacoma, Washington, with the Raksmi Kamara Cambodian Band. And he and them will be performing this Saturday night, May 20th at 7:30 at Park Rose High School. And they are the subject, actually Duran Cravan is the subject of our next story right here on Stage and Studio.
musical family that totaled 11 people, he was immediately drawn to the accordion.
You know, my brother, the oldest one, he play drum, he play violin, flute, and my other brother, he play guitar, drum. Another brother play, younger one play guitar. So we have a band play together, guitar, just for fun for the family.
But Durand's family came to an abrupt and tragic end when the Khmer Rouge took over on April 19, 1975. Durand was 21 years old and going to college when the tanks with soldiers rolled into the cities. They rounded up people and took them into the fields and forests to start a new agrarian life. Anyone educated, professional, or capitalist, meaning westernized, was executed. Durand, who was wearing a shirt and tie, was immediately singled out.
They said, "Who's a doctor?" That man, he raised a hand, and professor raised a hand, soldier raised a hand, and then they said student, and then I raised my hand.
One of his brothers was with him at the time. Durand appealed to the soldiers to keep them together, but they refused.
Seven soldiers come to escort us to the forest. And that time we start to know that we must be killed. And so we just walk until the person, I think he's a doctor, he just move his head and then they shoot him.
The men knew they had to do something. Together they overpowered the soldiers, ran into the Cambodian forest, and tried to survive. They had nothing to hunt with or anything to keep them warm when it rained, and each day they sent Durand, the youngest and most able, to climb the tallest tree to look out for wild animals, or worse, the Khmer Rouge soldiers.
You know, in the forest, there are like a snake, cobra, tiger, elephant, and different kind of wild animal. So that's not easy to live in the forest. But also you see the beautiful thing in the forest. I can see the birds, I can see the mountain, I can see everything except the faces of my family. So that's why I create that song in my brain that time. I call The Top of the Tree.
One by one, the men died of starvation or were killed by predators or soldiers they encountered. At one point, Durand tried to cross the border to Thailand through the minefields. Durand, to this day, believes the animals came to save his life. A deer ran up in front of him and was blown up, then a rabbit. Rather than risk the minefields, Durand surrendered himself to the Khmer Rouge and was put to work in the camps. He farmed without tools.
You know, even the corn, I have to steal my own corn that I grow, and then they not allow you to do that. So that's why you cannot possess anything. You must be killed if you steal that.
Durand worked in the killing fields through the entire reign of the Khmer Rouge until 1978. He says he wouldn't have survived if something miraculous hadn't happened.
I just saw the accordion on the stem of the tree, and then they say, I want to touch. And then I'm really surprised, and then I say, wow, that's a dream really come true. I just think about that, and then the accordion come. This the God provide this instrument to me, or what?
The Khmer Rouge let him play. The music drew people from neighboring camps. Children came, and then other musicians. The Khmer Rouge gave them instruments so they could play for festivals that glorified the new regime.
Every kid, all the adult people, they come to see me. That's I become famous in that time. Famous in the hell time.
And each day after a meager meal of rice, Durand would play his accordion and wonder if any of his family was still alive. He continued to work and starve till January 7, 1979, when the Cambodian leader Pol Pot fled the country to escape a military offensive from Vietnam. Pol Pot also left up to 3 million of his people dead and 4 million starving. The Khmer Rouge soldiers just said, go home. Durand walked the long road to his family home. All that was left was a gatepost, cement steps, and one younger brother.
When I go there, I just that post and then I cry. I just see the post, but I didn't see my family.
Durand lived under the Vietnamese-installed government in Cambodia till 1984. He then escaped into Thailand, lived in refugee camps for 4 years, and then came to America.
When you say one word, how do you survive? Across everything, I cannot believe. How can I survive? But I'm here. I'm still Durand.
Musician Durand Cravan will be performing with the Cambodian band Raksmi Kamara here in Portland on May 20th
at the Crossing East Heritage Festival. Doors open at 7 o'clock. Show starts at 7:30 at Park Rose High School at 12003 Northeast Shaver Street in Portland. It's free, but suggested donation is $5 to $10. For more info, call 503-233-2919. That's 503-233-2919, or go to crossingeast.org. That's it for our focus on Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, this special on the Stage and Studio this week. Next week, we feature a female version of The Odd Couple with Integrity Productions. We'll also feature the story of Asian frontier woman Lalu Nathoy, otherwise known as Polly Bemis, in Idaho. Till then, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring 100% natural fiber clothing for women and men. Real clothing for real people. Proud to sponsor the important voice of KBOO, Gazelle is located at Northeast 41st and Fremont and can be reached at 503-288-3422.